That's also important, this idea of collaboration. Collaboration, it's a buzzword. It's been in family therapy field for a long time, and everybody talks about collaboration. But not a lot of family therapists realize that we found in outcome research that collaboration is the most important factor in the relationship. So we know that the therapeutic alliance is very important. We know that it's the most important thing. The person of the therapist is second, but the therapeutic alliance is most important. But what do we know about which alliance is most effective? Well, we know that if you look at the effective alliances, that collaboration is the most important factor. Empathy is important, authenticity is important, congruence is important, but collaboration is the most important.
Welcome to The Systemic Way. In today's episode, we have a return of Peter Rober coming to talk to us about an article that he co-wrote with Karine Van Tricht and Rolf Sundit called One Step Up, But Not There Yet, Using Client Feedback to Optimize the Therapeutic Alliance in Family Therapy. This paper won Paper of the Year in the Journal of Family Therapy in 2021. The reasons were that they felt it was well-written, innovative, and most likely to be influential in the field. So how could we not try to find time to meet with Peter to discuss it further? Peter is, of course, a family therapist. He's also a full professor in clinical psychology at the University of Leuven in Belgium. And his primary research interest is a focus on the family therapeutic process, with a special interest in the therapist's inner conversation and silences in families. I think that's a little bit of an introduction to Peter for those who don't know him, but let's get back to what our episode's about. So, Cesar, what has stayed with you from our conversation with Peter?
I mean, I would like to add, can we officially call Peter Rober now a friend of the podcast? He's returned to our podcast, which was real touching to have him come back.
Yeah.
And he's the kind words he shared about the podcast. But yeah, what stuck with me? One of the main kind of themes that we spoke about was the challenge of the therapeutic alliance in family therapy, and how the therapeutic alliance being one of the main concerns and considerations of things that we need to be focusing on and thinking about in our approach. And Peter shared this, the feedback tools that he's co-created in his work. Over 10 years, he told us, it's over 10 years in the making, some of these tools. And feedback being a way that supports the therapeutic alliance. So the tools I really took away, as well as my own focus on intentionally, what am I doing in terms of creating therapeutic alliance with families, with young people, but also with other professionals that I work with, actually. But the feedback tools is something that since meeting Peter for this podcast, I've really tried actually to experiment and implement in my practice in the clinic that I run. And I've seen some fantastic outcomes. So I'm really, really excited actually by using these tools. I'm really excited about editing them, because he gives kind of an invitation, doesn't he, and when we speak to him, about editing them to be contextually appropriate to our service or the people that we work with. So that's something where my head's at, around how I might make this more specific to the people that I work with, and the questions that I specifically would like to also get out from feedback.
Thanks, Cesar. I think it's worth mentioning, actually, in terms of the feedback tools or the instruments, it might be probably is mentioned in the episode as well, but you can access these resources free at www.intherapytogether.com, because like you said, Cesar, Peter wants to make them widely available to people. They can be edited and changed and adapted to various settings. I think that's definitely one of his wishes and hopes, which is a great gift, really, to, for us to use. I think Just to add, I suppose, Cesar, to what you said, I think it's really made me think just about more about feedback in my own practice, and to be more aware of it and what it can offer and how we can use it and how to become really good at feedback. And I think it's really helpful, isn't it, for me, I thought, to have these instruments, these tools to I guess to really understand the value of feedback and to co-create with the people that we work with. It sort of feels that ethically it brings you into kind of alignment with families in a different way, and to have a more of a collaborative process, really. So I've really appreciated that, and I've definitely been bringing it into my practice as well, which is always a gift in terms of your own development as a therapist. But obviously Peter speaks very eloquently about this, and so I hope people will really enjoy the episode.
Let's begin. Welcome, Peter. Welcome back.
It's great to be here again. Hi, Cesar. Hi, Julie.
Hi, nice to have you here.
Today, our plan is to talk about your work using a therapeutic tool in terms of using feedback-orientated approaches in your work and thinking about some of the tools that you've created. And also looking at the paper that was written in 2021, which is called One Step Up, But Not There Yet, Using Client Feedback to Optimize the Therapeutic Alliance in Family Therapy. I know you co-wrote this with some colleagues. That's Van Trich and Sundet, who are not with us today. But we're really interested in this way of working. Just to say as well, congratulations, because that paper won Paper of the Year for Journal of Family Therapy last year. So it's hugely popular.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, it's great.
And we'd really love to hear what kind of come of that for you, actually, and for this way of working. But before we get into the paper, it would be really great to hear some of your kind of your story of how, where this began for you, where the kind of interest and the need for using more kind of systematic feedback in your work. Where did it all start?
Yeah. Well, it's in fact, it started with my colleague, Karin Van Tricht, who was also one of the co-authors of the paper. And she came with this idea. She had read about this thing of feedback orientation and so on. And I must say, at the beginning, I was very critical and I was not very enthusiastic. But Karine and I, we work together, we like each other, and we have a lot of respect for each other. So we started with this process of exploring what it might mean. And I must say, she was the most enthusiastic and I was the most reluctant passenger on the journey. And gradually I became more and more enthusiastic. And so now it's very clear that whenever I speak about this and or whenever I write something about this, I always have to acknowledge Karin, because she was such an important force in the beginning of our journey. And what we did is, in fact, we started to work first with some of our colleagues at the university who were exploring the use of feedback orientation for individual therapy. And we worked together with them, and the basic idea that feedback has to do with the relationship between the therapist and the clients, this basic idea we got from them. But at a certain moment, they became really an enterprise, and they became a firm, and money became an important issue. And we thought, no, we are connected with the university and we cannot afford to have this double position. So Karina and I went our separate way, and we focused clearly on using it for family therapy. That's what we did. And we started, in fact, with the existing feedback questionnaires like the SRS, the OQ45, and so on. And we used them for several months with our families, and we asked the families to give feedback. And how did it feel for them that we used these instruments integrated in our family therapy practice? And so we learned a lot from our families and from what they told us about how they looked at feedback. And some of our families were not enthusiastic, but some of them were. But they also taught us that, in fact, we had to make sure that the instruments we used would be user-friendly. Because in the beginning, we used all kinds of instruments, things like the CBCL, which is a list of complaints, and it's a very long list. And so at the end of every session, people had to fill out this long list, and next session, the same list again, and they had to score each of the complaints. And so they said, this is not useful because we filled it out last week and now again, and next week we will do it again. And we have to fill out always the same items. And so also they said, it's too long. And so it became very clear for us that we needed instruments that had there were three criteria. They had to be brief. They had to be focused on their concerns. And it had to be clear how it was, how we used it, how it was useful for them. So it had to be clear that we used their feedback to make changes in the therapy or to, so it had to be clear that in the next session, we use their feedback for their benefit. So that was, in fact, very important for us. And so this start was very important. And then we came up, we started to develop our own instruments and we started to explore these instruments. And then the final version of these instruments, that's the versions that are now on our website and that we use now. But it took maybe 4 or 5 years to develop them.
So how many, when did you start it? In my kind of reading around the topic, I've got like about 10 years ago, approximately, you started?
About 2010, we started. So, yeah.
So it's over 10 years.
I think
I was wondering when you kind of knew, like, oh, okay, I can hear that you were really taking on board from the families what worked, what didn't work. And I imagine you must have tried out a few different things before you kind of thought, these are the tools, these are going to be the dialogical feedback tool. And when I was curious, sort of, when you felt, well, do you even feel like you're there? Is it something that's evolving and might evolve further?
It's evolving. In a sense, it's evolving because every year we have a new instrument, and so if you look at our Dropbox, there are new instruments all the time. Also, we do some research on these instruments, and so that's also evolving. We do, but not statistical research, but mainly content analysis. And so we look at what kind of answers do you get to what kind of questions and so on. Mm-hmm. One example of this is that the second question of our feedback, dialogical feedback questionnaire, the second question is, did you feel understood by the therapist? And in the beginning, we gave them a field to answer this question. And it was just one field. But it was very clear that we didn't get a lot of critical feedback. It was very difficult for clients to say that they didn't feel understood. And so then we thought about that. And then we made, in fact, two fields for them to answer this question. One field in which they could say, we felt understood in this aspect or in this respect, and another field in which they could say we didn't feel understood in that respect. And so by making two separate fields, it was very clear that it was more inviting for them to be critical. And so that's one of the, in the beginning, we didn't have these two fields. We only had one field. And so that's one of the changes that came later.
Mm-hmm. And am I right in thinking that people can download these resources? Is it www.intherapytogether.com?
Yeah, that's my website, and Then you can click on, I don't, there's a menu on the top, I think, and there you can click on instruments, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to the website, and on the website, you find the different feedback tools and also manuals and also articles and case studies and so on. Mm-hmm. You can use for free. They are all instruments, all questionnaires are two versions. There's a PDF version and a Word version. And the PDF version is the version that we use in our practices. Mm-hmm. And the Word version is, in fact, an invitation for everybody who wants to make changes and to adapt for their population or their context in which they work. It's not our idea that the way that we use it, that it's universally the best way to use it. You have to make adaptations depending on your population, your context, and so on and so on. And so that's why we provide them also in Word versions.
That's such a lovely invitation for people. Do you get much response from people on their adaptations and some of the variations people have done? Do you get to see some of these?
I get to see some of those, but that's the disadvantage of working with the Dropbox and with offering them for free. We don't know how much they are used and by whom they are used. We don't know, in fact. And sometimes I meet at the conference in Ljubljana in September, for instance, I met people and they say, well, we're a team from Greece and we work with your questionnaires. I didn't know. Or somebody else said, well, I adapted your questionnaire for this or for that. And so that's very nice to meet these people. But if I wouldn't have met them at the conference, I wouldn't have known. So that's one of the disadvantages of working in this way. So we don't know how many people use our questionnaires or which questionnaires are used and how they are used. We don't know. Mm-hmm. It's really anecdotal that we meet somebody who, by coincidence, tells us, yes, I use them. Mm-hmm. But we have several questionnaires have been translated in different languages. By people, just people from Norway, people from Sweden, and so on. Mm-hmm. Also in Hebrew, in Arabic, and so on. Mm-hmm. And this is just their initiative. We didn't ask anybody to make translations, but people made translations and they send it to us, so we could put it on the Dropbox, so that everybody can use them.
Yes, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? There's such a gift in a way to offer to people and also to give them the freedom to take it into their context and into all the different countries that you've named as well. I was wondering if it would be helpful, because I know that one of the main things of these tools is for it to be a conversational tool for people to use. But actually, as you said, there's questionnaires, and I know in the paper you give an example where there's two different pictures with speech bubbles for people to write feedback on as well. And I was wondering if it'd be helpful actually to explain the sort of three different stages of the tool, but also within that, I'm really curious about, because there's something that we were saying about putting it down on paper and then using it for conversation, for feedback, rather than just getting verbal feedback.
Or initially just what the tool is. If you can.
Yeah, kind of, okay, yeah.
I know it's quite challenging because it's a visual aid, isn't it? Well, if we can kind of, for people listening, just to let them know what the tool actually...
Our basic tools, in fact, there are two tools. One of them is for children. And this is what you were referring to, Julie, with speech bubbles. Eh? So you have two smileys, one with a sad face, one with a happy face, and each has a speech bubble. And the invitation is to the family members, to the children. But when we use this questionnaire, this tool for the children, we use it also for the parents. So we also invite parents to fill out the speech bubbles. So that's the invitation to this smiley was in the session and is feeling sad. The other smiley was in the session and is feeling happy. What do you think he would say or she would say about the session? And really young children make drawings in the speech bubbles. all the children who can write, they write words and sentences and so on. Usually it's quite brief. The answers to these questionnaires are usually quite brief. And so they are a very good invitation to talk about. The next session you can say, well, you wrote this. Can you explain a little bit what you mean? And so, and then that's the start of a conversation. So that's the first questionnaire. The first questionnaire we use for families in which there are small children. Second questionnaire is a more like a real questionnaire in the sense there are 5 questions. And we use them for families in which there are young adults or adolescents. So I don't know exactly at what age you can switch from one questionnaire to another. It's not so clear. Mm-hmm. That questionnaire, the 5 questions, we decided not more than 5 questions. We remembered our family members who said, make it brief. Eh? So not more than 5 questions. Mm-hmm. And there, for instance, one of the important questions is, did you feel understood by the therapist? So that's an important question. Also important questions, I think, are the 4th and the 5th question, which is what moved you most in the session and what surprised you most in the session. And these 2 questions, they are very interesting because, in fact, they are not about feedback to me as a therapist, but usually they are feedback to other family members. Mm. That's something that we hadn't expected beforehand. We thought feedback questionnaires, it's feedback from the client to the therapist. But using the feedback questionnaire, it became very clear that the 4th and the 5th question, this is almost always about family members. A mother talking about the children. I was surprised that my children talked so much in the session. Or a wife talking about her husband or whatever. So they talk about each other and it's not feedback to me. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's also feedback to me if I know that the mother was surprised that her husband consoled her. Okay, this is, of course, important information, but it's about the relationship between the mother and the father, right? Not about the relationship with the therapist. Mm-hmm. So these are the 2 main feedback. Back questionnaires, we have more, but these are the 2 2 main questionnaires that we use. Because you asked about the 3 moments, eh? Mm-hmm. And so it's very often a question that we get when we talk about this with students and so on. They tell us, why do we need to write, or why do the family members need to write it down? They can just say, they can just give the feedback verbally. But especially in family therapy, but in fact also in individual therapy, but especially in family therapy, we really prefer to write it down for 2 reasons, main reasons. The first reason is when you do it verbally, you always have somebody who will talk first. And when, for instance, the daughter talks first and the daughter says, it was a very nice session because I had the impression that my father felt understood and really started to talk about his feeling. The second person who talks will probably focus also on the father and will say, yes, indeed, our father was different today. And so the first person will probably start to talk about the theme, and there's a lot of chance that everybody will focus on that theme. While when you ask everybody to reflect on their own and to fill out questionnaires their own, there's much more multiplicity. And there's much more, a broader range of themes that are discussed. So that's the main idea why we use it on paper, pen and paper, and not verbally. You can also ask some of our colleagues; they do it in online. They ask the client to go home and to go online, and then to fill out the questionnaire online. You can do that, but we prefer to do it in the session because this allows us to observe what happens and to observe also the interaction between family members around filling out questionnaires. Also, it can give you some indication about how you can understand what's on the questionnaire. For instance, I had last week, I had a session with a family. At the end of the session, everybody fills out the questionnaire. And one daughter is sitting there with tears in her eyes, and she doesn't write anything. And the father asks her, why don't you write anything? And she says, I'm so full of emotion, I cannot write. Mm. And so then I gather all the questionnaires, and so one questionnaire of the daughter is empty. But I understand why it's empty. If she would have filled it out at home and she wouldn't send it back, I wouldn't know what's it about. And now I know, oh, she didn't fill it out because she was too emotional. Okay, so I think it's an additional interesting possibility of observing how the people fill out the questionnaires and how they interact also when they are filling out the question.
Yeah.
So that's the first. In fact, there are three moments. The first moment is the individual family members fill out the questionnaire, and then typically in a session it's quiet. Then everybody is focused on the questionnaires, and it's quiet, and everybody is reflecting. So that's a moment of quiet reflecting. Everybody is looking inward and trying to feel what did this session mean for me. That's the first moment. The second moment is usually half an hour before the second session or the next session starts. And this is half an hour that I take to read it and to reflect on it. So the second moment is my reflection. The first moment is the reflection of the family members. The second moment is my I reflect on the answers they gave and how I can use them in the session in a constructive way. And then the third moment is the dialogue. It's the session, the next session, in which we talk about the feedback. Usually it takes the form that I ask them to tell a bit more about what they've written. Because very often this feedback is condensed. And you feel, you sense that it has a lot of meaning, what they've written. But you're not sure yet what it means exactly. And so very often the start of the next session is, wow, thank you for the feedback. But can you explain a little bit? Because I have the impression this is important for you. Can you tell me a bit more? And that's the start of the next session. Mm-hmm. And so it starts, in fact, it's all about my curiosity, I think. So in the I get curious about some of the things they've written, and I use that curiosity to start the next conversation, the next dialogue with the family.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Beautiful model. So you end the session with the feedback, and then family, yes. And then you do your own reflection on those feedbacks in preparation for the third stage of the dialogue about it and how to incorporate. How much time do you typically give families at the end of a session?
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
10 minutes. But sometimes it's not enough.
Yeah.
So I used to be very, very good in ending the session on time and so on. I lost a lot of my strictness about that, especially when there are children involved, because children sometimes take the time to, and they take pencils and they take they color and they make drawings and so on, and I don't stop them. It's such a generosity, I think, of children to really try to make this feedback beautiful and to make it, to present it in this is like a present that they give you. So I don't stop them, and sometimes it takes 20 minutes, and so the next session then I start too late. It's a pity, but that's a price I really want to pay. Sometimes I have this client I loved this family of this client, but this man is a history in psychiatry, and he has come a long way, and he's now a father of two daughters and a son. And I've followed him for 10 years already. So it's not a therapy that was 10 years, but the first time I met him was 10 years ago. And this guy is really very thankful for the history we have together, and he really wants to do it very well. So he takes the paper. He starts to write, and he writes very slowly because he wants me to read it and to be able to read it without too much effort. And so he writes very slowly, and it takes a lot of time for him to answer the 5 questions. And I give him time, and I try to, sometimes I need some some breathing exercises to keep myself calm, because I know that some other people are waiting in the waiting room, but I want to give him time. And then at the end of the questionnaire, he turns the page around and he starts to read it slowly to see if he didn't make any language mistakes or spelling mistakes or whatever. And so it takes a long time, but it's such a present this guy is giving me. And so, okay, that's also a disadvantage, you can say, but it's in another way, it's very beautiful, this kind of stuff. But you lose a bit of control over time. It's true.
I was wondering, connected to that, Peter, like the second stage, which you were saying is, you know, you take time, half an hour to read it before you go into the session, is how much, when you go back for the third stage, are the family aware that you have taken time to look at it, to use it to feedback? Because there's something, I suppose, in them knowing that, if you do share that, I don't know how much of that you share, of being known that they're being held in mind in between sessions as well. So I was sort of curious about that.
So the families know that I read these questionnaires, because almost every session starts with, I don't start with everything. It's not possible to comment on everything, but I always do something with the feedback. And sometimes, when there's a theme in the feedback that we didn't discuss at the beginning of the session, but sometimes somewhere in the course of the session, I can say, oh yes, that was on the feedback questionnaire. Mm-hmm. Yes, you wrote something about that, and so on. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. I think it's very important for us as therapists to really show that we read these things, that we thought about these things, that they are important for us, that we use it to attune to them, and so on. So that's very important. Mm. And in fact, so the questionnaires are important, but the way you use them is equally important. And so you have to really think about how you use these questionnaires, how you present them, how you react to how you react to critical feedback. Yeah, that's really a very important issue. Eh? Mm. It's very difficult for clients to be critical, in the sense that they want to be friendly and they are thankful for what you give them, and so very often they will be very very polite, and they will say, oh, it was a good session, and so on. And so it's not so easy for most clients to give critical feedback. And so the moment in which you can sense some level, and very very often it's a bit under the surface, when you sense some kind of disappointment or criticism or whatever, it's important to hear it and to comment on it in a constructive way, and to show that you will not retaliate, you will not be angry, you will not stop the therapy. No, you will use that feedback that's a bit critical in a way that you make explicit, I want to attune to you. And so that's very important. It's very difficult sometimes when the criticism is very explicit. It doesn't happen so often, but it happens. It happens that a family member says, this was a big disappointment. You didn't understand at all what this was about. And usually it's not the whole family that's critical. Usually it's one family member who's critical and the others are not. But this, of course, it's very important to do something with that criticism. My experience is I first have to do something with my hurt feelings. Because very often I'm surprised by the criticism, because I try very hard to attuned to the family, and then when somebody doesn't feel understood, it's usually a surprise to me. But I've learned to take it seriously, and if a family member doesn't feel understood, I didn't understand that family member, so I have to try again to understand. But first I have to regulate my hurt feelings, and sometimes I'm angry. And of course, it's childish to be angry when you ask feedback and they are critical, than to be angry. But that's who you are. You are just a human being. Mm. And of course, this anger shouldn't come between you and the client. So you have to find some way to deal with that anger and to put it aside so you can be empathic again and so on. And so it's not so easy. It's important to do this kind of stuff, but it's not so, it's more than handing out questionnaires and to collect the questionnaires. No, it's much more than that.
Because you talk about the kind of reframing critical feedback. And I think it's in your book, the In Therapy book, where you connect it to the Bateson ideas of critical feedback, cybernetics being actually positive feedback because it brings about change, and flipping this kind of idea of affirmative feedback being, you know, negative feedback, because that kind of just maintains a status quo and homeostasis. So the idea of feedback being a positive thing, and also a symbolic, I guess, of the safety that a therapist creates in that connection with people to allow for critiques. Yeah. To come,
because that's in fact a bit of a paradox, in the sense that when people give me critical feedback, I can it can be that my feelings are hurt, but in fact receiving critical feedback is the best positive feedback, positive comments you can get. It means in fact I trust you enough to be critical, and I know that you will not leave me, or you will not abandon the therapy, or you will not retaliate, or take revenge or whatever. And so, in fact, when you get critical feedback, in fact, you get also the message, I trust you. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it the other way, some of my students, they say, well, it's very nice, these feedback questionnaires, and the feedback I get is always very encouraging, and people are happy and they're never critical and so on. And then I say, this is a problem. If your clients are never critical, this tells me that they experience the therapeutic, or they maybe don't experience the therapeutic relationship as safe enough to be critical. And so in some cases, therapy progress can be seen in the fact that clients start to give criticism. Yeah. And it's, of course, it's very paradoxical, but it's...
Yeah. I mean, when I hear you speak about it in this way, it makes me think of attachment theory. When I was reading the paper and I made that connection, it was so... I was like... You know, I suppose my relationship to questionnaires, and probably with other people, you know, is like, it's this thing that you do. It can feel like a tick box exercise. But I think through this tool, in a way, you see how it's a much deeper thing, and even comes down to that sort of initial relationship between, you know, parent and child, and the opportunity within this tool for repair, actually. Becoming more reflective and thinking about the different ways in which we give feedback to family members, even give feedback to each other. But yeah, I was just wondering if you had anything to add in terms of attachment, really, because I was curious about that.
It's about do I allow myself to be myself, or do I... search safety in trying to be who you want me to be. Mm-hmm. And so if you always give positive comments to the therapist in fact doesn't know what this means. Is this really, are you really pleased with the way it goes, or are you just being polite? So it doesn't say a lot of things. But when somebody takes the risk to say, I like this and that, but I don't like that, then you get some kind of a safe relationship, and you get also, in fact, a person, because this means that I am different from you, but we still have a relationship. So this is indeed about the development of personhood. Huh? Mm. Can I be a person in your eyes? So that's really attachment theory. Yes. Yeah. So it's very important, I think, if you use these questionnaires, not only to focus on the content. And so we know from Václavik and so on about the content and the process and so on. So we have to be always looking at the process. But this is about people are in interaction with other people. And so it's not only about the words that are written. It's also about the words, but not only about the words.
Yeah. Mm. And kind of following up on the process, how might you kind of set this way of working up with families? You know, how might you encourage families to use feedback in this way, to give critical feedback as well, and to really engage in the process? And how you kind of verbalize it, or how you kind of speak to families about this way of working, and also including the worries questionnaire that I know is kind of one of the first steps in that.
So the words are not enough. So it's if you introduce your questionnaires only with your words, it's probably not enough. So we start with first, before people come to us, we send the worries questionnaire to the family, and we ask them to fill each of them to fill it out. And this is in fact asking them, who do you think is most worried in the family? What is this person worried about? And the second question is, how worried are you, and what are you worried about? And so then they send these filled out questionnaires to us, and we have some kind of an overview usually a range of different worries that are present in the family. And this is in fact the first step in introducing questionnaires before the first session. And then in the first session, I demonstrate what I do with these questionnaires. And so this means I thank them for filling them out. I show them that I've read them, and I deal with it constructively. I will not be critical. I will deal with it constructively, telling them, for each of these worries, let's talk about it. I will listen to you. I want to understand this, and so on. So each of the questionnaires is welcomed in a certain way, and this gives them an idea about how their feedback is going to be welcomed, the feedback they fill out at the end of the first session. So this is a very important start, I think. Another thing that's important is that I give a lot of constructive attention to and focus on the person who comes to therapy who is least motivated to come to therapy. This is important for me because that's the person who's likely to be most critical. And so when very often I work a lot with families with young people, 15, 16 until 27 or whatever. And so let's say that I'm working with a family with mother, father, and a girl of 14, and she doesn't want therapy, and she shows it in the whole way she is in the session, in the way she looks. She doesn't look at me. She hides behind her hair. And it's very clear that the parents want therapy and she doesn't want therapy. So this is, if I can deal with her in a constructive way, in fact, I tell them criticism is welcome. And I can say to her, yes, it's very clear that your parents want therapy, but maybe therapy is not a good idea for you as a family. Some families, for some families, family therapy is not a good idea, and so on. So by saying this kind of stuff, in fact, I tell them criticism is possible. And so then I try to come as close as possible, close to the person who hesitates most. But very often this means not very close. So in fact, for instance, this 14-year-old girl, she tells me with her body and with the way she is in the room, she tells me keep at a distance. And so I try to find the right distance, close enough, but not too close to make her uncomfortable. And so I want to show at the same time to her, I'm interested in you, I want to connect with you, and at the same time, I respect the distance that you need. And to find the right distance while acknowledging the importance of hesitating, the importance of being critical, the importance of not running into something that you don't know, and so on. That's also a way to show appreciation for criticism. So these are some of the things, and what I really want to emphasize is it's not just about these questionnaires. It's a whole attitude that you have to live in the session together with the family for them to feel safe enough to be critical. And then the first time when somebody is critical, always thank this person. Very often it's one person, the others are not so critical, and sometimes the others, especially the parents, will say, oh, you cannot say that, you have to be polite and so on. But I say, I thank them and I say, it's important, I want to better understand what you mean, help me to make not the same mistake again, and so on and so on. And, so I put him on a throne, this person who was critical. And then you see that in the next sessions, there will be more criticism.
It encourages it. I'm interested in what you think of, what kind of the main message you think you're communicating to families in working this way, in setting up this kind of approach with families. What do you think people are receiving from this, from you?
Mm-hmm. I think... these questionnaires allow people to be different within the family. And so I'm not looking for what's the problem in this family, but I'm looking for each of them. Who are you and what are you worried about? Let's talk about all these things. And so I allow people to be different and to be still be a family. It's not because you're different that you're not part of this. No, this family is connected. And there are differences. Let's talk about this. And so that's one of the things. Another thing, and that's the first thing I said, is about what my message is about families. But the second point is what my message is about therapy. Therapy and a therapist is somebody who tries to find the best way for this family, but who needs the help of the feedback of the family to find this way. I'm a kind of a guide, but I'm a guide who needs assistance. I need, what do you want? What do you need? What do you like? What didn't you like? And so on. And this will help me to guide you. I cannot guide you on my own. If I guide you on my own, I will probably guide you in the wrong direction. It's not the direction that you need. And so that kind of message, I think, is also in the feedback questionnaires.
I was wondering about, when you were speaking, when Corinne first came to you with the suggestion of doing this and you weren't sure.
I was really anxious that maybe therapy that our way of doing therapy would have to change. That was my main fear in the beginning. So I thought, we can do these questionnaires, but it shouldn't prevent us from doing good family therapy. And I was afraid that it would prevent us. But I really changed my view of that. I think now that it helps us to be good family therapists.
Absolutely. And I think you've really, and you are really clearly sort of showing all the different things that doing these questionnaires can bring to your relationship with the family, to the work, the process, what you might work on, but also your own development as a therapist. I was wondering, it made me then, I was thinking about training, and I was thinking about when there's people who are in, or when even other family therapists who might have the same thought that you had in the beginning, how can we support people to kind of, I suppose having this conversation makes people more open, but is there space, do you think, in training for people to get a better understanding of the use of questionnaires?
I think it's if family therapists want to use these questionnaires, they need time. And it's not a good idea to bombard them with the message you have to use it and you have to use it now and you have to do it in this way. No, I think if we want to integrate it in a good way, we need time and we have to explore a little bit and we have to get to know it a little bit and we have to try this and try that and see how it works. And I think it takes months, it takes maybe a year or whatever to see how you can integrate it in your way of working with your clients in your context and so on. I know that there are some places in which people are obliged to use it. I think in Norway, for instance, some of the centers there, they have to use the session rating scale. And it's very clear that the usefulness of these questionnaires it's less useful if it's something you have to do than when it's something that you think yourself that it's useful. And so you see, for instance, the clients, when they feel that the therapist does it because he has to do it, but in fact he doesn't believe in it, the clients will answer the questions in the same dull way, in the same uninterested way. Mm-hmm. But if as a therapist you really show with all your body and all who you are that you're interested in it and that you can really use it to do a better job, then you can see that this also in the clients. So time and having the chance to explore and to try and to practice and so on. And then I think having a good example is also at first questionnaires are introduced in a team or in a department or whatever, the first reaction we receive is often, but we already do psychological diagnostics and we use psychological tests and so on. And so it's very clear that the idea of a questionnaire has a very bad reputation, in fact. So also with me, I don't like question. I don't like to fill out questionnaires usually. And but this is something different. It's a questionnaire, yes, but it's different. It's not about and that word conversational tool is for me very important. It's not about measuring anything. So we don't do statistics, we don't do averages, we don't make diagrams and whatever. No, we use it just to talk and to try to talk in a better way, in a way that is better attuned to what you need.
And there's a clear distinction there, isn't it, in terms of what it's useful for and the ethics that you talk about, the kind of the move away from accountability to responsibility. And you talk about accountability being, I've written the quote here, actually, that you refer to the tainted ethics of accountability. And you said, ethics of accountability has been hijacked to function within a neoliberal discourse. Just interested if you could say a bit more about this and how we might shift from an ethics of accountability more towards responsibility and how this tool helps with that.
Well, when we started 10 years ago, when we started with this, we worked together with these individual therapists, and it's their idea that the feedback should function, should circulate between the client and the therapist and not go to management or to the team leader or whatever. And so this was then, I don't know now, but then it was one of the, if you look at the literature on use of questionnaires and so on, there was this fear that questionnaires were used to evaluate therapists and to, for instance, sack therapists because they didn't get good feedback from the clients and so on. So it was very clear that for us, the feedback questionnaire needed to stay, also for the privacy of the clients, needed to stay within the therapeutic relationship. And some of the managers I worked with, that when I talked about feedback, that their idea was right away, oh, then we have data and we can put them in our reports and then we can use these data to make decisions. I said, no, these are not data for management decisions. This is something different. And so for me, this distinction between accountability and responsibility it's something you find in philosophy and so on. But for me, this is the difference. Responsibility is my responsibility as a psychologist, as a psychotherapist, as a family therapist towards my clients. And it's, I'm accountable towards the people who pay me. I can tell them and I can give an account of what I'm doing. But my responsibility, and the responsibility is something that's before the action. I'm responsible for, before I do something. I'm accountable. It means it's after the action. Afterwards, I can give an account of what I've done and why I've done it. So for me, this is the main difference. And so using feedback questionnaires fits in a frame of responsibility about how I try to be the best family therapist that I can for this family. That's my responsibility. And if you need an account, if you want me to explain what I did and why I did it, that's something else. And that's that I can do to my manager or to my team members or whatever. I can give an account what I did, within some limits, of course, of privacy and confidentiality. But I can give an account about that. So for me, this is philosophically an important difference, but it's very, very relevant for this this point of the feedback questionnaires.
So does this fit in with the kind of the Buber's ideas of the I-thou relationship?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So responsibility is a very important word for Buber. So that's indeed, it completely fits within a more dialogical way of thinking, but I think you can use feedback questionnaires. You don't have to be a dialogical family therapist or whatever. You can use it within whatever model that you use, because it's focused on the non-specific factor of the alliance. And so it's not about the, you can use, if you are an EFT therapist or a ABFT or whatever, you can use this idea of these questionnaires. I'm not saying that it's I think it's important for family therapists to use feedback questionnaires. I'm not saying that you should use my or our feedback questionnaires. It's just a possibility. There are other questionnaires too. They're very good. Just look for what fits best for you, for your clients, and for your context.
And just picking up on that, kind of the non-specific factors, and I mean, research into what works in terms of psychotherapy. A lot of it kind of comes down to this therapeutic alliance. And that's the kind of the common factor across models and paradigms that helps with change. And I'm interested in your thoughts of the complexity of the therapeutic alliance within a family therapy paradigm, because it's very different, isn't it, to individual therapy, and then how, again, this tool specifically aims to support that challenge.
So we know in psychotherapy in general, we know that that the therapeutic alliance is very important. And it has been measured often as an effect size of about 0.56. And when you look at family therapy, then you see that the effect size is even higher. And so it's even more important, the alliance is even more important in family therapy than individual therapy. But it's also more complex. And the main idea of the complexity is that, for one thing, I'm confronted with different family members, and I have to have a good, safe relationship with each of the family members. But also, and that's another layer of the complexity, the therapeutic alliance also extends to the relationship between the family members. And that's an important point. So it's not only about my relationship with each of the family members, but it's also about the relationship between the different family members. And so this, in fact, is very complex. And as an answer to this complexity, we have the Boris questionnaire, we have the feedback questionnaires, and these can be very helpful to exactly optimize, in fact, our alliances with our clients.
Because it's allowing the therapy to be adjusted and adapted and tailored every step of the way.
That's, yeah. Because that's very clear. Outcome research always shows us that there is no one size fits all. In fact, the best therapies are the therapies that are tailored, and a good therapist is somebody who's flexible and who is listening to what the clients are saying and trying to attune to what their needs are. And in that way, if a therapist is too strict, this therapist will be able to help some people, but not a lot of people. And so if you really want to be helpful for a lot of people, you have to be flexible.
Which I imagine really helps with, engagement and positive outcomes, I imagine. Yeah, if you've got family members who are invested into the process themselves and feeling a part of it, and a collaborative process.
That's also important, this idea of collaboration. Collaboration, it's a buzzword. It's been in family therapy field for a long time, and everybody talks about collaboration. But not a lot of family therapists realize that we found in outcome research that collaboration is the most important factor in the relationship. So we know that the therapeutic alliance is very important. We know that it's the most important thing. The person of the therapist is second, but the therapeutic alliance is most important. But what do we know about which alliance is most effective? Well, we know that if you look at the effective alliances, that collaboration is the most important factor. Empathy is important, authenticity is important, congruence is important, but collaboration is the most important.
Absolutely.
And so if you look at the outcome research, in fact, what we know is a therapist has to find a way to collaborate with the family members, which is not so easy because these family members are different and they have different ideas and so on. Collaboration is important. I have to be empathic for the way their experience life and the way they suffer and so on. I have to be I have to validate whatever they do to make it better, and so I have to be very positive towards them, not stressing the negative but stressing the positive and their commitment to having a better life together. And then I have to be congruent, I have to be real, I have to be authentic. So I have to be a human being in a collaborative relationship. I'm emotionally, there has to be empathy, and there has to be validation for the whatever the clients do to make it better for them. And so that's a brief sketch of what an effective therapeutic alliance should be. And if you really focus on these factors, well, feedback questionnaires are very useful.
Yeah, I've been trying to experiment with using your particular model of feedback in my own practice, and it did get me questioning myself initially. I was like, when I first meet a family or first speak to a family, I explain that I value a collaborative approach. Yeah, and I want this to be something between us, a journey we go on together. Thinking about how do I actually do it, besides checking in quite often and, you know, asking if we're going down the right kind of places that they are talking about, the kind of things they want to talk about, or getting a generic kind of feedback from them. I wondered how much I hold on to that, and if it kind of that idea of collaboration just gets lost along the way if I'm not systematic enough. And since I've been using your tools and being very intentional with it, I found a big shift in my practice in that specific area, you know, but really bringing people alongside me. Because as much as I, in theory, I hold that ethic and spirit of way of working, but how does it actually show up in my practice? By forcing myself to be very intentional with it, it made me realize that it wasn't as collaborative as I had hoped it to be. So it's really been very beneficial.
So, that's nice. Yeah, nice to hear. Yeah.
And since I've been using it, lots of challenges are coming up, and you know, and some kind of difficulties. And I've taken a note, and I know Julie did as well, of some of the things that we thought would be some challenges. But it'd be useful to start thinking about what you think are some of the main challenges of using feedback. I mean, you've mentioned quite a bit, but to start that conversation.
So because I've used it a lot, the main challenges are: how can I make room for critical feedback, and how do I deal with critical feedback? And that's for me the most important point. But when you start out with using feedback questionnaires, I think the main challenge is how to integrate it in your work in a way that feels natural. That you feel it's not strange to use it, or no, it's integrated and it feels okay. And so that takes some time. And it has to do with very practical things. If you use these questionnaires, where do you find them? Do you have to print them out just before the session, or do you have a pile of these questionnaires lying somewhere? Where are they? Do you have, I don't know what they call it, like a thing where you put the papers on and where you can write on, so that you don't give just a piece of paper and a... Yeah, flipboard. Yeah.
Or it's so, laminated. So
that'd be a nice idea. Yeah.
So you
practical side of it.
For me now, when I start to work with the family, I've they're lying there on the flipboard with a questionnaire and a pencil lying there ready for, and they're always ready there. I know that when my pile is getting already when I'm out of them, I make again maybe 100 new questionnaires, and they're ready, and so I'm prepared for it, and it doesn't make it give me, I don't have to do any effort anymore. I don't have to think about it because I know they are there. But it took several months before I found the way to just practically to have these pencils ready, to have this clipboard ready, to have these papers ready, and so on. So I think that's the first point. To make the time for it, and to do the practical things.
Do you think? Yeah. I suppose I was just wondering that if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a family here, that if you're going into a session kind of knowing, I suppose expecting, and that's part of the process. I'm wondering, does that, in one way, it gives it a focus, and it can help a family to be active because they know they're going to be giving that feedback. But is there anything that it might possibly take away, I suppose, from a session? Because are they just coming? I don't know. I'm just wondering if it can be too narrow, I suppose. Like, do they think I'm going to give this positive, I'm going to give a negative?
Do you know what I mean? Follow-up to that, I guess.
Yeah.
Additionally, so am I too focusing on the here and now and the kind of the immediate experience of the family? And does it in some way take away some of the focus from maybe the more kind of deeper underlying processes? It's an early thought, but yeah, I don't know if that was connecting to what you were saying, Julie. Like, are we missing something by focusing on this? And if so, how we might we widen it again?
It's my impression is that it helps to focus on the here and now, and in that sense, on deeper layers, and not deeper layers about talking about how I feel at home or yesterday or last week, but more in connection. I'm more connected with what I feel now, and so and if you it doesn't fit your view of therapy, then maybe it might be a disadvantage. Eh? But for me, this really fits and this really helps me. Mm. Also, what I see is that family members sometimes start to use it in a very active way by just saying, next time we have to talk about this and that. Mm-hmm. And so it's very clear they know already that I use it as a kind of a menu card for the next session, and they make it very explicit. And so then that's feedback that I feel this is useful for these families. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are also families that don't find it useful. Some families, they They don't want to use it. And of course, I accept that. I invite them, can you fill this out? But if they say, no, we don't want to fill it out, of course, I accept it. Also, I accept it when four family members say, we fill it out, and the fifth said, I don't do it. Or when they say, I just fill out this, and I don't fill out these questions, I accept everything. It's always about inviting and accepting how they respond.
Thank you. So that's really important. I think that's really helpful to hear, actually, that there's the inviting and then there's the acceptance of whatever they bring.
And then the next challenge in my mind is, and I guess there's two things here. One, I'm thinking about the bias of the therapist, you know, in like the second stage when I'm reflecting on the feedback, what are some of my biases in interpreting their feedback, how I might tend to that, but also what I give privilege to in terms of when there's like conflicting things, which is likely to happen in the different feedbacks, what I focus on or what I then do with it to bring it into the session. It feels like a challenge as well.
And it's not, I don't think this is specific for using feedback questionnaires, because these biases also are at work in other moments in the therapy. But it's true, and I can see myself making some mistakes, and sometimes I interpreted something in this way, and afterwards it's clear that I had a wrong interpretation. So yes, that's true. That happens. But again, you have to be open to the feedback that you didn't understand it right, and you have to adapt it and be flexible. And so, but that's part of therapy. That's not specific for feedback questions. But it's also there is no tool that will make therapy effortless or that will prevent us from making mistakes. No, we will make mistakes again and again. But we have to be open to feedback, and we have to be focused on trying to be the best therapist that we can. And this means also being self-critical without being self-destructive, to be self-critical. Yes, I made a mistake. I thought this, and now I see that I made a mistake, so I try to correct it.
I'm connected to when you last met with us and you spoke to us about the self, the listening to the inner voices of the self and the therapist. And sorry, Julia, I know you were going to say something.
No, because I was also wondering, like with these the feedback. I'm wondering, like when you come to the end of the therapeutic process, is it a way also of looking back at the process with a family? It's, you know, in a way, it's quite. I don't know if you've ever done that, but that was one of my thoughts as well with it, to track the journey from when they first came in.
I especially when I write about, when I make a case study, this is something I do. And then sometimes it's very confrontating in the sense that you see the mistakes that you make. And in my book, Together in Therapy, there are several moments when I look back and I see that I should have done something else, but I did it, and hopefully and luckily sometimes I correct it again, so that it's that's the process.
I mean Peter, I really appreciated actually today you speaking, and especially when you've spoken about how hard it is to hear feedback, and sometimes you have to go away and you have to look after those feelings, and also, yeah, you get it wrong, you're not going to get it right, and that's part of doing this job, and it's what you do with it. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, and also because I have, you know, I'm so excited. I haven't used this tool in this way, but when throughout this conversation I've been thinking, it really feels like it fits with the way that I work, and it would be so helpful actually in my own development as a therapist. So thank you for sort of very clearly describing that.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Thank you.
I'm also interested in the self-supervision questionnaire.
Yeah.
And
we didn't talk about that yet. Yeah,
we didn't. And it seems like an important part. I mean, in my head, I understand it as a part of the stage two of this. I don't know if that's where you might locate it or if it's separate.
It's also in stage one. It's I fill out the self-supervision questionnaire usually while they are filling out their feedback questionnaires. At the same time, during that 10 minutes when it's so quiet, that's when I use also to reflect on myself. And the self-supervision questionnaire is really focused on how do I feel that I'm part of this process? And do I feel that I'm flexible enough to have a good connection with all family members? Or do I feel that I'm on one side and I'm not connected enough with this family member and so on? And so, for me, this self-supervision questionnaire is very interesting because I write down in the heat or just after the heat of the session, the quiet after the heat of the session, I write down some of my impressions about who I am for this family and so on. And then 2 weeks later, in the second moment, and when I prepare the next session, it's very interesting to read what I've written at the end of the session, and sometimes I surprise myself. And it's also very interesting to compare what I've written with the feedback of the family. Mm. And sometimes this is also surprising and interesting. And this is something I sometimes talk with the family about. You tell me this, and I thought it was that. So thank you for correcting me, and so on.
So there is some sharing of that with the family, even if it's not explicit. There is, you bring it into to the session as well.
I don't share it systematically, but it's one of the possibilities to take something and to share it with them. When I think it's useful for the process of the family, I will share it.
Mm-hmm. Peter, it's been fascinating. I echo what Julie said. Thank you so much for really bringing it to life. You've brought the tool to life. Yeah. I know you did say it might be a difficulty because we don't have the benefit of visual aids, but I really feel like we've told the story of what this tool is about. As a kind of ending kind of questions, I wonder what you mentioned earlier a little bit about research that you're doing around it, and I wonder where you'd like the tool to go next, what future research ideas there might be, or what other researchers might want to take on and develop the research base.
Training is more in the future now is more in training than in research. So I do a little bit of research, but my major focus now is how I can help colleagues and in Belgium, but also in Europe and even in the United States to use these questionnaires in a way that fits their context. And so it's, for me, that's very important. Don't do it as I do it. Do it as fits your context. But the main idea, the general ideas can be used in the different contexts. And the main ideas are try to listen to the differences, try to be flexible. You have to change, not the family has to. You have to change. Try to make space to talk about the things that they raise in the themes that they raise in the feedback questionnaires and so on. So the main ideas are universal, let's say, but the specifics, how exactly the feedback questionnaires is developed and how you use it and so on, you have to adapt to the situation and to the context.
And Peter, am I right in thinking then that people could go, you mentioned your website earlier, to find out if you're going to be offering workshops and trainings to support people with using the questionnaires? How would how would we be able to find out about that?
You can go to my website, that's first, and then I have my YouTube channel, and there are some tutorials there, but not enough. I will make more tutorials in the coming months, and I I do workshops, but I don't have a central place where all my workshops are listed, so you have to look around where I am Usually I give workshops within a training institute or something, several places in Europe and in the Americas, also in South America also. And sometimes it's online and sometimes it's in person, but that's a good idea. Maybe I should make on my website all the different possibilities of where you can get to know my way of working or my view. But I will also try to make more tutorials for my YouTube channel, so this can help them.
I'm very happy to hear that. That's, your YouTube channel is great. It's a great resource for family therapists. I like the idea of a centralized point. I'm picturing, you know, you get them T-shirts, Peter Rober on tour on all the different venues.
That's a good idea.
But we will also put a link in our podcast for people, for your website, so they can access your stuff and your resources. But yeah, thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you.
An
honor and pleasure.
Great. Thank you very much. And I wish you a lot of success with the further episodes of the podcast. It's a great podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.